You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
What's up, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Straight Up Sabres, presented by the Hockey Podcast Network and the Charging Buffalo. As always, I'm Brendan.
And I'm Taylor.
And Taylor, it was more of the same from the Sabres, one step forward and two steps back, as their back-to-back this weekend was split between the New Jersey Devils and the Toronto Maple Leafs, starting off with a 5-2 win over the Devils. And boy, oh boy, they followed that up with an ugly one against the Maple Leafs at home that I had the, not pleasure, I had the unfortunate occurrence of being at. It was a 3-0 loss again. And Taylor, I got to tell you, this may have been one of, if not my least favorite experiences in KeyBank Center of my entire life.
Go off, King.
Well, as we all know, as was widely reported, the stadium was full, which was great. The arena was packed that night. However, I am not joking, Taylor, when I tell you 80% Leafs fans, and that might even be on the low side. It wow. was, I mean, it was just crazy. It was all capped off with Austin Matthews scoring his 60th goal. And I don't think I've heard the stadium that loud or the arena that loud. And maybe since the 10-game win streak, and before that, probably the playoffs. It was... Wow. It was booming loud. Maple Leafs fans, the Canadians came down and yeah, they packed the arena. And honestly, it was tough. I mean, you really couldn't look at any section in the lower upper bowl and feel as though there was more Sabres fans than Leafs fans. And I got to tell you, I think most people who are not Toronto Maple Leafs fans probably have somewhere skewing towards the unfavorable perception of Leafs fans as a whole. And yeah, that's fair. It's absolutely fair. These people were obnoxious. To one section to my right, I have a guy whose entire face, mind you, probably this is a grown-ass man in his 30s. His entire face is painted blue. He's wearing a hockey helmet, wearing shoulder pads, and he's trying to get the crowd to do chants with him. Right next to me and Denis, we were at the game. Right next to us is this this Maple Leafs fan. Granted, they were all surrounding us, but the guy right next to us was just making these trying to be nice, but so obviously patronizing little brother comments, being like, oh, well, that was a pretty good shot there. Like,
yeah, just be mean. Just be mean.
Exactly. Like, I would rather you talk shit to me than do that.
You're not better than those other people.
It's the worst. And I just truly, I wanted nothing more than the Sabres to win that game just so that I could see all of those people be miserable because they were so obnoxious and annoying. And God, it was just like nails on a chalkboard every single time that whether it was the organist, whether it was Sabretooth or a fan or a group of fans would start a Let's Go Buffalo chant, it would get drowned out with Go Leafs Go chants. There were more, I mean, it was just consistent across the board. There was more Leafs chanting than there was Sabres chants. It was as though we were in an away arena. It was like we were playing in Toronto. It was that loud. And
if we were playing in Toronto, it wouldn't be very loud.
Fair. Well, I think the thing is that it made me also come to realize too, that I want to kind of get your thoughts on is, for one, we could talk about the game and everything, but I've just also been thinking about the premise of like what the Sabres can do in the meantime until they get good. Because I think once they get good and they're playing meaningful games against the Maple Leafs, then, you know, it's not going to nearly be as bad. However, this has been a problem. And I think that the Sabres need to start seriously thinking about what they can do in the game presentation to kind of like mess with these people back and these fans when it's just when the arena is getting dominated like that, because you can't just continue to allow these fans to come into your building and make a mockery of your team, make a mockery of your fan base, and just have no ammo or nothing to throw back at them or to throw shots at them or to, even if it, like, you know, just playfully messing with them. They just didn't do anything. They just sat there and let it happen. And I mean, there wasn't anything from, again, like any kind of gimmicks. There wasn't any interactive things between any of like the in-arena hosts or the overhead announcers. There wasn't anything from Sabretooth. Like, you just laid there and just repeatedly got stomped on by these fans. And it just really bothered me that, I mean, obviously, sure, to a certain degree, it's on the fans and like people being there to try and like get involved and get in on chance. But when you're that overpowered, the arena needs to, I think, take a little bit of initiative and like do stuff that messes with the Maple Leafs fans that are there. That is like you're throwing shots back. I don't know. But within all of that, though, Taylor, was a hockey game, and the Sabres lost 3-0 to the Maple Leafs in a game that, you know, while we're talking about where the Sabres are at in the playoff standings and in the race itself, there's really not much hope there, if any at all. We have kind of been at that point now for a little bit where there hasn't been any hope. And even though that was the case, this is still a weekend, a Saturday night game. Sure, it's the second half of a back-to-back, but you're playing against your biggest rival at home. And not that there's even really that much of a moment to show up to, but my God, the Sabres did not show up on Saturday night. After a strong performance against the Devils, it was like they were scared. It was like they were playing with like a fear inside of them, and the Maple Leafs were just completely dictating the pace of play. Even though the Sabres were out shooting them, it just didn't feel as though there were, I don't know. I mean, Samsonov, he did have a good game, don't get me wrong, and the Sabres did generate some quality chances. I just didn't feel as though there was any point that the Sabres had a consistent control of the game where it felt like they were going to make the game interesting. Were there interesting moments and key opportunities for them? Yes, but at no point did I feel like they were dictating the flow of the game. And it just was just so disappointing. And I think there's a few things that stuck out in this one. For one, I am just beside myself still about Dylan Cousins and how ugly this season has been for him. You know, we've talked about the struggles that Tage has had, that Skinner has had, that Tuck has had. We think that maybe there's some injury involved there. Maybe there's other factors, but boy, oh boy, Dylan Cousins has just had a really, really rough year. And it feels like has just taken a pretty big step back, not having Jack Quinn on his wing. And while I think there's absolutely the potential in the long term for him to grow into a guy that is not reliant on who his winger is to dictate what kind of player he is, it is a little bit alarming right now, as we've talked about recently, that it does seem as though he's so reliant upon Quinn. And the problem with that, Taylor, is that Jack Quinn does not look like he should be playing hockey right now.
That was a big takeaway from this past week or so. He looks still hurt. He doesn't look good.
Talk
like he did
about
the middle
that
of the season.
Give what me your thoughts on that.
I think it's pretty simple. I think he wanted to come back and not waste a whole season and be able to get some good hockey in before the end of the season. And the Sabres are happy to oblige him because they want to see what he looks like too before the season's over. And maybe he's not ready, or maybe he needs time to get up to speed, but there is no time because the season's ending. I think it's not a huge deal either way, but he just no way around it. He doesn't look good or ready.
It's bad. It's bad. I mean, it's a pace of play thing. It's a confidence too. I think one of the hallmarks of his game down the stretch last year was that you were starting to see him take a lot more chances, and more they were starting to pay off due to just him growing as a player, but also the growing confidence that's there. And it does feel as though almost that he's not playing nearly with the edge that he was playing with down the stretch last year. And even at times this year in the limited time that he has been healthy, I don't know. Are you of the belief now that even though they won't do it, that the best thing for him is to probably shut him down?
I don't know. I think that's something you have to consider at the very least. I hesitate to answer that question because I think it's best answered by the medical staff. Or maybe considering the Sabres history, it's worse answered by the medical staff. But either way, generally you'd want someone who is way more in the know. I just know he looks bad right now. There's seven games left, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a chance he looks better in those last seven games, and maybe he just needs to get ramped up. I don't know. It's hard to say. I would say that he didn't – I don't know how many games it's been, three or four. He has not looked like he's belonged on the ice in pretty much any of them.
Agreed. Agreed. And again, let's be clear too. He's been off for a while. He missed so much of the first part of the season. So of course there's going to be an adjustment period where he has to just get up to speed, get back into game shape. It felt like it was just kind of like, oh, he's skating now with the non-contact jersey and he's practicing with the team and gets kind of thrown back into it. And so we'll see. I mean, you'd like to see him finish off the year strong, but ultimately, I think that what needs to be at the top of their minds right now is just his health and in the long term. And if it means that there's an increased risk of him injuring something by continuing to play, then I think that they need to take a long look in the mirror and determine if that really is what they want to try and make a risk on when they're already pretty much out of it here. So as you had mentioned, though, Taylor, we are on the home stretch here. There is only 7 games remaining in the 23-24 season. Going through them, first up on Tuesday night, April 2nd, the Sabres are going to be facing off at home against the Capitals. They follow that up with a Friday matchup against Philly. Then next week, the Sabres are playing Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday against Detroit, Dallas, Washington, and Florida, respectively. And they close things out on Monday, April 15th, against the Tampa Bay Lightning. Taylor, coming up, though, on Tuesday against the Capitals, a pretty big moment here. Jeff Skinner playing in his 1,000th NHL game. Talk a little bit about Skinner's career up to this point. Of course, as we know, you know, really over the past 10 plus years, he's been one of the premier 5-on-5 goal scorers in this league. He has certainly had his struggles in Buffalo, just in terms of, you know, Ralph Kruger, if we're being honest. But otherwise, even though he maybe hasn't lived up to the $9 million cap hit that he takes year after year, he has been a pretty effective player when put given the opportunities to be in the right situations here. And even though obviously it's unfortunate, you know, people have been ragging on him about having played 1,000 games now and not been to the postseason yet, you still can't deny the fact that Skinner has gotten to this point at only 31 years old for a reason. And he has been an effective NHL player throughout the entirety of his career, you know, obviously save for a couple of down seasons here or there. So Taylor, talk to me a little bit about Skinner and his career and him reaching this big milestone.
Yeah, it's obviously super impressive. I think it's weird to imagine that he's played with the Sabres for more than 400 games now. This will be his 421st game coming up. And it's definitely been a roller coaster, kind of like his whole career has. He started off with, you know, winning the Calder as an 18-year-old, and he's one of the rare guys. There's only a handful I can think of in my time watching hockey. I think of O'Reilly, Bergeron, Skinner, Zach Benson is some of the only guys that were not top five picks and played right away as an 18-year-old. Played all 82 games, had 31 goals, won the Calder. He's on the all-rookie team. He had 63 points. The thing is, I think is interesting with his career going forward is a few things. He was kind of inconsistent in terms of scoring, one. Two is that he had 32 assists that rookie year. He didn't have 32 assists again until last year when he had 47, which is far and away his career high, and it was also his career high in points last year as a 30-year-old. But, you know, Carolina was not good at the time. It was in the – definitely their post – it was their post-cup era, but they'd also gone to a conference final in 09, and they – his rookie year was their second year of what ended up being a playoff drought that would last the rest of his time in Carolina, almost a decade. And his couple of years after that, he followed up with weren't great. But, you know, as a 21-year-old, he had 33 goals. But he follows it up with 18 and 77 games. And at that point, if you're Carolina, you probably are wondering, like, what kind of guy do we have? And I'm not sure he's really answered that in his career beyond a guy that can score at even strength, score goals at even strength. There was a time, not too long ago, we talk about a lot, where scoring was at a premium in the NHL because nobody was doing it. And basically the middle of the last decade was the peak of, like, what I would kind of call is the goalies are too good era. Where goaltending was just unbelievable. And also, frankly, defense was too, and there's such a defensive focus. Some of the lowest scoring years ever, not quite as bad maybe as the middle of the previous decade, the decade prior to that, right before the season-long lockout. But in 2014, 15, 15, 16, 16, 17, these are some of the lowest scoring years. He had 28 goals in 2015-16 and then 37 the next year. A lot of those coming at even strength. He was literally one of the best in the league at that. And I mean, if you're going to be good at one thing, that's a pretty valuable thing to be good at. He's never been a great player in his own end. And we've said that a million times going back to us pleading for Ralph Kruger to just realize what kind of guy this was. But I think what's so interesting is how tantalizing it was when he got to Buffalo, despite the fact that he was very much an established player. He'd played almost 600 games. We didn't, the first 2 months in Buffalo, we didn't even know, you know, like what we're watching. It was like, holy shit, is this guy going to score 60 goals? This guy's so good with Eichel. Maybe this guy just always needed to play with the right player. Because as weird as it is to say now, you could have made the similar case that people make with Eichel or Reinhardt or whoever else and being like, well, Jeff Skinner just never played with good enough forwards. Maybe Jeff Skinner never had a good enough center. And that would have been it's a case a lot of people made in fall of 2018. And it didn't seem like a crazy one. Unfortunately, there's bad timing all around when he came here, because he got traded to the Sabres pretty much immediately after the O'Reilly trade. And that hot start that they had, not only his hot start, but the team's hot start, both gave way to pretty ass seasons. He still scored 40 goals. The Sabres did not win 40 games. They had one of the worst collapses in NHL history. And honestly, I think it might be the worst. They went from having the best record in the league on December 1st to missing the playoffs by, Brandon, I don't remember, was it 20 points? They missed
the playoffs. Give or take. Yeah. And I have a hard time disagreeing with you on that.
So all of a sudden, you know, it's like, what the hell do we do with this guy? What do we do with all these guys, but especially Skinner? Because the other bad timing thing is he was a UFA. And I'll give another further bad timing thing. Carolina's made the playoffs every year since he left. I don't think those things are super related. I think they're moderately related. Not because he was a problem.
Yeah.
It wasn't because of him. It was what his trade symbolized for them. Kind of beside the point, but it kind of symbolized a smarter management. Like, hey, if we're not going to resign this guy, let's just get something for him, you know, now instead of waiting till the deadline. We're just going to go full into the system we want. We're not going to resign him anyway. Let's just get something. And that ended up being a pretty smart decision, even though I wouldn't say the trade itself was really fair for both sides. Mm-hmm. But anyway, coming into Buffalo then, another bad timing thing. They hire Ralph Kruger. He has these 2 years that are really stand out in the middle of his career. Played 59 games in the COVID-shortened season, 14 goals, 9 assists, 23 points. And then in the next season, which is the siloed season, the Sabres played 7 teams all year. He had 7 goals, 7 assists, 14 points. That was the peak of Kruger putting him on the fourth line. Kruger putting him in the press box until this is the crazy thing, his 14 points got better under Granato at the end of the season. I think he had 0 goals when Ralph Kruger got fired. He was just putting him in a terrible spot. Well, the next year, 33 goals, 36, 63 points. As I mentioned before, 35 goals and 82 points the following year. And now we're at another point with Jeff Skinner, in my opinion. He started this year pretty strong as one of the only guys that was scoring. And now we've come on to yet another bad piece of timing for him, because he's hitting his 1,000th game, not just at the end of another failed season for the Sabres. Because if this game was coming in December when the season was going poorly, but it was still kind of early, maybe it wouldn't be that bad. The fact that it's coming in the doldrums of you're basically just out of the playoffs, you're almost mathematically eliminated, and you're just playing out the string, and the season's been such a failure. That's one part of it. The other part of it is it's clear now for months that Skinner, I don't know if it isn't right or if he's just taken a step back. Given his age, I think that makes a lot of sense. He's 31. He's turning 32 this offseason in a month or so. So that's all bad. Now let's say something good, Brendan. You want to say some good stuff about Jeff Skinner?
Yeah, I mean, as I said before, really, you look at his ranks among 5-on-5 scoring leaders throughout the 2010s, and Jeff Skinner is near the top of that list. He's not the kind of guy that has ever on a consistent basis posted those eye-popping numbers that somebody like a Matthews or an Ovechkin would normally, you know, post year over year. But when you look at who Jeff Skinner is, he's been a consistently pretty good NHL player. You know, there was a while in his career where it was very much, as you kind of alluded to, a lot of back and forth just in terms of having, you know, a very strong year. And then he takes a step back a little bit. And those are obviously all due to a variety of factors and reasons. But, you know, I think you look at his Sabres tenure. I mean, you're never going to be able to get to the point where you're going to say, oh, OK, you know what? The contract was worth it. You know, we ended up paying for Jeff Skinner, giving him $9 million a year over an 8-year deal. That was the right thing to do. Of course not. And I mean, granted, you could say whether it's fair or not. to judge a guy based on the contract that he's given, but it's what Jason Botterill ended up negotiating. And while I think it still looks pretty outrageous to this point, I think it was an important sign and or signal for the fan base, you know, to be able to retain Skinner after the career year that he had. So at least he has been able to be here, and he's been a very likable Sabre too. I think that when you look at his time, I mean, first, of course, it starts off with him playing on the first line with Eichel and getting really great opportunities. And he comes in and scores 40 goals in his first season here, 63 points, which at the time, I believe it tied his career high. So naturally, people were very high on him. And I think everybody universally just about wanted to re-sign him. I think everybody at the time, for the most part, knew that $9 million was maybe a little bit too rich. But at the same time, I think it was just more important to be able to keep him around at the time for, again, what it meant to the fan base. And yeah, I mean, in this time, Skinner, he's played 420 games. It's going to be 421 games with the Sabres when he hits 1,000. And I would say, you know, over these 6 years here, he has been one of the more likable players. He's been a little bastard, similar to how we kind of talk about Benson a bit. We make that comparison from time to time, just in terms of how Skinner has been able to be a pest, and he gets under his guy's skins and he's never afraid to talk, even though he is a smaller guy. And there's just a lot that's really likable about him. You look at Between Two Stalls, obviously that was incredible last year. Supposedly, I think they're doing a new one tomorrow. That's going to, well, the day that everyone's listening to this on Tuesday, I think a new one's supposed to be coming out in honor of his 1,000th game. So that's going to be really exciting. But I mean, yeah, he has a lot of personality. He's always smiling, obviously, in his pictures. He's a fun dude. He has the amazing goal songs year after year, and it kind of shows that either he's very in tune to the fans, or even maybe more likely, he has a secret Twitter account that we don't know about and follows along with what people kind of talk about in Sabre's online communities. But I'm a big fan. I like Jeff Skinner a lot as a player. And I will say, you know, we made this point last episode, but he's 31 years old right now. He is playing his 1,000th game at 31 years old. So naturally he has a lot of mileage on him, understandably so. But I think what's important to remember is that he does play a brand of hockey that it should be able to translate a bit into his 30s. I don't, you know, while I think that we are experiencing a little bit of regression now, obviously, after having a career year last year, I don't think that this version of Skinner that we've gotten over these past few weeks here, past month or plus, is what he's gonna be next year. You know, I want to think that it's gonna kind of be more of the same, I guess, in a way, where he is a little bit of a streaky scorer, but I don't think that the days of him being a 50-60 point guy are behind us by any means. And I think depending on how this upcoming offseason goes and what positions he's put in next year, I think it's very much, you know, within the realm of possibility that he could still be a 50 point guy through the duration of his contract, or at least into the last year of it. I think that's when maybe we'll start to see more of a drop off, but I still think for the next year or two, we're going to be able to get a quality offensive contributor, even if the defensive side of his game is pretty not good.
Yeah. I wonder going forward what it's going to be like, but I guess I'll say, I'll agree with you on really a lot of the personality stuff. It was cool. The Sabres have not had a lot of big personality guys in our time. Well, you know what? Hockey hasn't had many very big personality guys in my time. Cool that. And he's a different kind of guy. And it's not just that he has different interests, like the Emily in Paris cameo thing that they got.
Amazing.
The woman who stars in that show is great. It's just such a funny thing. And he's kind of a weird little fellow, which I like. Like many guys throughout this era, I regret the fact that the Sabres haven't been able to actually make the playoffs or have a lot of success with them, because it'd been make it easier to talk about these things and really look back with fondness on them, on things that aren't just fun social media videos. Like Between Two Stalls has been great. It's proof that he's not just quirky. He's genuinely a really funny guy, mm-hmm. which is rare in sports in general, not just hockey. So I kind of want to defend him, but first, before we do that, should we hear a word from our sponsors?
I think that's a great idea.
All right, folks, we all know hockey games move fast, but with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner, the NHL, you can score faster than anything happening on the ice. This week, new customers can bet $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. So, for example, the Sabres, we've been talking about, we're going to play Washington. For some reason, I don't know why, maybe it's because the Capitals also aren't very good, the Sabres are favored money line right now. You could get it at -135. That's interesting. So whether you want to, I don't know, bet on the Sabres starting off a heroic run to the playoffs, or whether you think this is it, Caps are going to crush them, and that's it. Ovechkin's going to break Gretzky's record by scoring 46 goals in this game, or whatever. You just want to do player props or puck line, money line, whatever you want to do. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app with code THPN. New customers can bet just $5 on the NHL and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook with code THPN. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus, but age will vary by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/hockey for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. NHL and the NHL Shield their registered trademarks of the National Hockey League. Copyright NHL 2024. All rights reserved. So a combination of two things we're talking about here. One, Brendan was delighted to be in attendance to see Austin Matthews score his 60th goal this season. Great. I'm sure that was a lot of fun. We forgot to mention that earlier. Bleacher Report Open Ice tweeted this out, and no big deal. This is something I was already keeping track of, but glad Bleacher Report got it out. Austin Matthews now has the most goals of any player drafted since 2010, despite the fact that he was drafted in 2016. I was already tracking him passing Jeff Skinner. I knew that was going to happen. It just so happened that I didn't think of it on Saturday because I was out drinking with my friends. I don't know where the people who do social media for Bleacher Report were. Apparently, they were not having a good time with their friends.
Unbelievable.
Anyway, Matthews has 359 career goals now. This isn't about him, though. The point I want to make is the graphic Bleacher Report put out a top 10 of these guys. Skinner has 357 goals. He's second among guys that were drafted since 2010. I mean, it's pretty remarkable. It's very good. I don't know what he's going to hold up like going forward in his career, but he's going to be a 400 goal guy considering the era he played in and that he mostly played on bad teams. It's a remarkable accomplishment. And I want to strike back against what all the anti-Skinner people are saying when they hear me say that. They're saying those teams are bad because of Jeff Skinner. And if you just look at it in the simplest terms, I guess I see what you mean, but I don't agree. And here's a simple reason. First of all, teams are never bad because of a guy, because of one guy. Ridiculous. Teams can be bad because they overpay one guy. And you can't be bad because of that. That could hurt, obviously. You give a guy $9 million and he scores 7 goals in a season. That's tough. But there really still, because I've heard this take before, there still hasn't been a season where Skinner has stopped the Sabres from spending the money they want to spend.
True.
It hasn't happened.
That's how I look at it, too.
They put together, for better or worse, the team that they wanted to save the Eichel era with in 2018 and 2019, going into 2019-20 especially. And then that's another season where they collapse. COVID happens. A lot of bad stuff happens. And even after that, the last hurrah of Terry Pegula spending money post the 3E's era is them signing Taylor Hall. They still agreed to sign Taylor Hall at that point because they hadn't paid Reinhart yet. It's a one-year deal, but he was never going to commit to being here for that long. So that happens. That's a total failure. And then they got rid of everyone. And then it was – he actually helped them a lot because they needed to hit the cap floor.
Yep.
Pick was a boon, and they haven't yet tried to spend at the cap, which I don't love.
Obviously. Not even close, too.
Yeah. No, not even close. So we'll see what happens in this offseason. It's something to keep an eye on for sure. But that's not really the point. My point is – that's not really a valid thing with Skinner. His contract hasn't stopped them from doing anything, mostly because they've been pretty incompetent besides that. Mm. However, I think a lot of people are going to be like, his bad defense is the reason teams miss the playoffs or that he's worse on defense than offense. I mean, that's ridiculous given how much he scored at even strength. He's literally one of the leading scorers, not since any 2010 bullshit or whatever, in over like a 7-year period, or maybe even longer, 8-year period, he's among the league leaders of everyone. That includes Ovechkin, Matthews. He's in the top 5 of even strength goals scored.
Yep.
That's huge. And granted, he has not been a great power play guy. He hasn't been a great overtime guy, especially now. They just really shouldn't have him out there in overtime. But he does the thing that he's supposed to do. And when I look at this list, it's not – there are some guys that are on here that are like, for example, Austin Matthews, dynamite in his own end. Really incredible. Probably the best American player ever, unfortunately. A lot of these guys are not like that. You know who's third?
Who's that?
On this list with 348 goals? His draft year – same draft year, 2010 – Tyler Seguin.
Wow.
Tyler Seguin been a very good defensive player in his career, Brendan?
No.
He's been to two cups. He's been to the playoffs more than a half dozen times. He's going to the playoffs again this year. Might be going to his third cup, possibly, depending on how things shake out in the West.
Yep.
Who else is in this list? Leon Draisaitl. Granted, he's a great passer, so he has another skill that Skinner doesn't have. Skinner is a good passer, but not a great one. He's... Steve in his own end. He's never been good in his own end. He doesn't need to be because he's so good at everything else. Another guy on here who just is remarkably similar to Skinner in everything except team success and reputation, Mark Scheifele.
Yeah.
Number 10, Mika Zibanejad. These aren't guys that are just unbelievably locked down guys in their own end, especially as, you know, the guys who are wingers. Like... Mm-hmm. And the difference is they don't score as much as Skinner. So what's the real problem here with Skinner's career? Glad you asked, Brendan.
I did ask. I was curious what your thoughts are.
You sounded just like me. Carolina was genuinely a terribly run franchise for a few glorious years. The cup win was interesting. I would say that they overall are one of the, not worst, but not one of the better rosters to win a cup. But no, regardless what you think, they were full of old guys. Mm-hmm. So that wasn't going to be a long-term thing. Then went forward with Cam Ward and Eric Staal. Eric Staal ended up being a really good long-term guy who was never as good as he was in 06. And Cam Ward kind of stunk. That's one of the big reasons they weren't all that great. They kept committing to Cam Ward. He wasn't that good. They had kind of another random run. Is like a 09, I think it's a 6 seed. That was helped by them having some crazy stuff happen against New Jersey and Boston. Got spanked in the conference finals.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was their only playoff appearance between 06 and 2019. And they just were – they were not a good drafting organization. They didn't sign a ton of free agents. They didn't spend a ton. They didn't make any kind of crazy trades. They were one of the classic, like, wow, that team is just kind of hanging around kind of team. And they had the longest playoff drought in the NHL after Edmonton broke theirs in 2017. But that was around the time they hired – you know, they brought in the group with, like, Waddell. They brought in Brendan Moore in 2018-19, right after Skinner. So – if there's some alternate history where they're like, actually, we want this last year of Skinner, or if somehow his contract extended to 2020 or whatever, are you going to tell me that really things would be appreciably different in Carolina? Like he just wouldn't have been part of their playoff teams? That they just were like, get rid of this guy? No, they looked at him when he got there. And I should also mention Eric Tulsky. That was a hugely important thing. They hired the smartest stats guy of all the stats guys. And that led to them being like I said before, they saw Skinner and they're like, 1 year left. Are we going to re-sign this guy? I don't know. I think our priorities are elsewhere, which smartly their priorities were elsewhere, and they just got what they could get. It's not like they won that trade. Not really, but it led to them doing what they wanted to do, and which is apparently losing the second round in conference final.
I was going to say, that's Cliff Poo erasure.
They got a great guy. I don't know where he is these days.
The hell if I know either. I don't know. I have no clue.
Yeah.
AHL. Maybe. Actually, let's find out. Where is Cliff Poo these days?
Hey, I guess it's Europe.
Let's see. Where is he at these days? Cliff Poo. Ooh, he's playing in the KHL. The more you know.
Does that count as Europe?
I mean, Russia can. Partially. Yeah, Russia's but weird. I don't think the KHL is necessarily...
Yeah, Russia is weird because it's part of both Europe and Asia.
Yeah, yeah.
Any geography experts, get back to me on that. Does the KHL count as European League? I got to be honest, good for him because I was thinking lesser than the KHL.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, there
anyway,
you go.
Anyway, back to Skinner. And when he getting traded to Buffalo, I would say that he was last year a pretty huge part of the reason that they were as close to making the playoffs for the first time in forever as they were.
Definitely.
And I know... close, blah, blah, blah. People don't want to hear that. But you know, it wasn't the offense's fault. The offense scored the fourth most goals in the NHL, I believe, last year. A huge part of that was because of Jeff Skinner. Skinner scored 35 because Skinner played unbelievably well with Tage and Tuck, and he was one of the they needed all three of those guys to be at the top of their game for that line to be as good as it was. Unfortunately, you know, they couldn't stop a nosebleed last year. And now, going forward, he played 1,000 games. He's going to probably score 400 goals. It's a good career he should be proud of. I think he'll play a playoff game eventually.
I do, too.
And beyond that, I think it's worth noting all that stuff. Good job. It's also worth wondering what comes next for Big Jeff. Or maybe we should, give him his moment and wait till after he plays his 1,000th game to ask that. Maybe that's an off-season question.
Yeah, I think that's probably going to be better served for the off-season. There's just a lot that is kind of up in the air right now. I mean, it's funny because you look at the roster as it's constructed right now and all the pieces that they have in the cupboard, and it's very fair to think that maybe Adams doesn't make any substantial moves next year, and maybe there is only one, if any, notable, like, big roster moves, additions. I would hope that they would take a long look in the mirror after this season and realize that they do need to shake things up a bit, but I think that Jeff Skinner is still going to be a part of that no matter what. I don't think that it's really the time for them to try to look to get out of his deal right now, because they don't have to, for the main reason that you mentioned before, which is they are not close to hitting the cap yet, and they haven't really tried to. The Dahlin extension and the Power extension are going to obviously make things a little bit more interesting and really get that overall number up, but it's not really preventing them from doing anything right now. They do have a little bit of time, and things are going to get, more complicated once you start taking into consideration the Paterka and Quinn extensions that are going to be coming along next year. But I think next year is really going to be about Skinner getting the opportunity to play out the rest of his contract. If he shows that he is able to be a contributing force on a team that is going to make the playoffs, then I think, if they break the drought next year, Skinner puts up, let's say, like 60 points again, I think you end up probably seeing him maybe play out the rest of his contract. Who knows, maybe in a year from now at this time, they'll be thinking about how they're going to be able to, or how they're going to have to retain and, add on an asset to be able to get somebody to pick up his contract, whatever. But I would really like to see Jeff Skinner break the drought here, be a part of the team to do so. He deserves it. I think it would be poetic in a way where, a guy who is, Jesus, he's got to be up there. Do we know who the longest or most games played by a player before making the playoffs is? I would assume
it's... No, he has the record by like a mile.
By a lot, right? Yeah.
Yeah. The other guys are like Gergensen's is up there, Ristolainen's up there.
Well, then there you go. Kind of exactly it. How perfect would it be? The guy who has the most games played without making the playoffs, helping break the longest playoff drought in the history of the sport. I mean, it's
perfect. It makes sense. Also, I've said this. There's no way to say this without it sounding like an excuse or apologism or whatever, but it's true. It's harder to make the playoffs than it ever has been, which is not some big excuse for him to miss or even that much of an explanation. It's just an explanation of why the all-time most games played without playing a playoff game list is filled with current guys.
Yeah.
Or more recent guys, I would say. It just as an explanation, the original six era, 4 out of 6 teams made the playoffs. You expanded to 12, and I think it was 8 of the 12 made it. They expanded beyond that. I think there was some preliminary round for a few years. It settled at the 80s. It's 16 out of 21 made it, which is absurd. Think about
that. Even seeing 16, that they're talking about expanding further, by the way.
Bad. This is – I'm going to explain why. Actually. Yeah. 16 to 21 was already bad, but I don't know. Back then you had a real – there was less parity, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
First rounds, just, the Oilers could dominate whoever the 16 seed was because it was the 16th best team out of 21.
Right.
And now in a league where there's a cap and more parity, 16 teams make it. A lot of those teams have a chance to make a run. That's why we've seen so many runs like that. I mean, it kind of devalues the regular season to – expand the playoffs. There's no good way to do it. So don't
agree.
Look at the East playoff race this year, guys. Ridiculous.
What if they did it in the way that the NBA does it, where it's 7 to 10? Have to do like a play-in?
Yeah. Not interested.
I'm not really either. I think it's, half the teams in the league making it is more than enough. Just be better than literally half the league.
Exactly.
Congrats, you did it.
It's finally a good system. And like I would say, they've it's been unchanged in that whole time. The 16, I mean, it's been changed in terms of seeding and all that, but the 16 team thing. Like, they went from 21 to 24 and then quickly from 24 to 30 and then 30 to 31 to 32. So that's why. I mean, it just, there didn't used to be playoff droughts because barely anyone missed the playoffs.
Yeah.
There are some horrific teams in the history of the NHL that made the playoffs. One of them, a couple of them made the cup even. So anyway, yeah, I did want to explain that. Like, the Sabres are a good example. And people talk about the Sabres history being full of, you know, at least playoff appearances, if not necessarily a lot of playoff success.
Mm-hmm.
That's why everyone made the playoffs. It was not that impressive to make the playoffs for a long time.
Yeah.
And as soon as it started to get a little harder to make the playoffs, the Sabres had the best goalie of all time. Kind of like, hey, I guarantee you're going to make the playoffs unless Ted Nolan is.
Yeah, it definitely helps out in that department.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, that's basically it. Anyway, good job, Jeff Skinner.
Go, Jeff Skinner. I agree. Do you have any other thoughts you'd like to share before we sign off, Taylor?
Not really, I don't think.
All right. Well, you know what, Jeff Skinner? 1,000 games, you know, that's certainly something for Jeff Skinner, who's, you know, he's measured his whole career on goals. So good for him for, you know, reaching a milestone when it comes to games. Taylor, any last thoughts?
Oh, recommendation.
Yes.
Late Night with the Devil.
Good.
If you're into spooky stuff, it's good.
I'm really looking forward to not watching that. But if you like spooky things, then go watch it.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Well, thank you for tuning into this episode of Straight Up Sabres presented by the Hockey Podcast Network and the Charging Buffalo. Make sure you're checking out both presenters of this podcast on their respective websites. Make sure you're checking both the Hockey Podcast Network and the Charging Buffalo out on social media as well, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, where you can also find us as well as all of our fellow shows. And make sure before you close out of this app, whatever you're using to listen to this episode of Straight Up Sabres, you are also following or subscribed to us, and we'd appreciate it if you'd leave a nice rating or review. Last but not least, we have our wonderful, lovely, just joyous sponsor. That's DraftKings Sportsbook. Make sure you're using that promo code THPN at checkout to take advantage of great deals. We will be back with a brand new episode on Thursday, everybody. Thanks so much for tuning in. This has been Straight Up Sabres. Sitting on the bedroom floor.